GIGA, Nordjyskes nye podcast om Aalborg håndbold.
Vil du helt tæt på, hvad der sker i Danmarks største håndboldklub?
Vi kommer selvfølgelig til at gå all in.
Så lyt til GIGA, podcasten om Aalborg håndbold.
Det går ondt på et hold som Aalborg, når man ikke leverer det, man gerne vil.
Der sætter vi hver uge fokus på de vigtigste historier og største profiler.
Dejligt at se, at han er den afgørende faktor, som vi ved, han er.
Lyt til GIGA, der hvor du finder dine podcasts.
Du lytter til en podcast fra Nordjyske.
Han er blot i starten af 30'erne, men James Gau har et meget omfattende fodbold-CV. I sommer der blev AaB tilføjet til det, da englænderen han blev hentet ind som teknisk chef af investorgruppen SSE 22. Hvilken opgave har James Gau fået? Hvad har han lavet indtil videre? Og hvad er målet? Det prøver vi at få svar på denne gang i Riposten. Mit navn er Jens Otto Barsø. Velkommen. Det kommer nok ikke som den helt store overraskelse, at James Gau er med her i studiet. Og så får jeg også lidt senere besøg af sportsjournalist Simon Ydelsen fra Nordjyske for lige at få en update og se frem mod fredagens topkamp mod Sønderjyske. And now I have to say welcome to you, James. Welcome in the studio.
Thanks so much for having me
on. And James, you haven't learned Danish yet.
No, I think the key word is yet. Yeah. I'm still getting used to a few terms. I learned one the other day. I thought the question that I was being asked by one of the women in work was, have you sold your cat? And I said, okay, I don't know what that means. And then she asked me again, she said, have you sold a cat? I think it was. And it meant, have you slept well?
But for the, har du sovet godt?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one, okay. But what I'm... The point here is that since you haven't learned Danish yet, we have to do this in English.
Yes.
And that, of course, puts some demands on the listeners.
Yeah.
But they have to, that's the way it has to be
I'll
today.
I'll speak as clear as possible.
Yes,
as well.
And this will be the first time we have this much of the riposte in English.
Okay. Yeah,
before we only have short interviews, but we'll try to do this, James. And first of all, you've had a time in Aalborg. You have been here since June.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your first impressions of being here?
Oh, there's been a lot to take in that amount of time. Of course, the move to a new city and a new place is not, you know, the first thing, and then meeting lots of new people at the football club. From moving here into the city, I think it's a wonderful city. You know, it's a really nice place, clean, and people are nice, and there's great places to eat and take coffees and these things. And from the football perspective, AaB is also a club that I've known a lot about for a long, long time. It's a place I actually visited 10 years ago when I was working for Liverpool. We came over here and did some courses, and it was a club, once I came here, I started to follow and, you know, think about more. And I've had a really positive first impression. I think there's a lot of good people involved, and of course there's lots of things to do. It didn't start in the best way, you know, with my first game was the home game against Silkeborg, which was, you know, a nightmare for everybody.
But how was it for you to watch that game? Because you weren't, at that time you hadn't been in the club for very long.
No, I'd been here 2 days. I knew a lot about the club, and I knew, of course, a lot about the situation, and I'd been looking into, you know, 6 months worth of work, looking into the club and understanding the squad and understanding the people there. But of course, that was a difficult day for everybody involved. And for me watching it was, you know, I'm disappointed and as the next person, but it also gave me fire. You know, it gave me a big motivator to say this cannot happen again. And this time, next year, in 1 year's time, the thought for me is, we have to be celebrating in 1 year's time because we've achieved what we wanted to achieve. So whilst there's, you know, clear negative and big problems with going down and big challenges with going down, I think you have to find the positives, and that's what we're aiming to do, and that's what we're going to keep fighting for.
How much did that one game change the plans for you?
Yeah, okay, this is it's such an interesting question, because As a group, a leadership group, we were planning different scenarios. You know, we planned a scenario that if we stay in Super League, and we planned a scenario that if we go to Nordic Bet League, and we had clear targets for Super League and then clear targets for Nordic Bet League. So It didn't change much in how hard we work and what we wanted to work towards. But of course, what it means is that you have to be, you have a different resource available to you and you have slightly different priorities. But it just meant that we just had to find different solutions for different things.
I guess it made it more hard somehow. Or was it the same for you?
It was hard for everybody around us, because I came into it, I think, almost in some ways as a benefit with fresh eyes. You know, there was myself, Ulla, Julius, who were brand new to the leadership group. And I think going in with fresh eyes, there was still, we've still got that. We want to make an impression. We want to develop. We want to put things in place. We want to improve. So that didn't stop. But of course, to see how down people were and what it meant to the fans and the staff and the players, you then have to pick them up. Whereas, if we'd stayed up, then it's a moment of relief. I don't want to call it celebration, because this club shouldn't be celebrating avoiding relegation. It should be celebrating successes. But there would have been a big element of relief. So I think what we had to do was, okay, think about things that are going to bring people back into feeling good, because if you feel good, you're more likely to perform. And that was the aim, and we put a lot of thought into that, even the pre-season matches, even the activities we do in pre-season, the different workshops and things with staff and players. We thought about all of those things, and they had to be changed in order to get the different outcome. You know, it was about bringing the spirits up, and that was a big aim for us.
Was it difficult to come into a club and do the job you had to do beforehand at a club where, well, there was all these problems? That there were, you know, there had been a lot of change in the staff, and there had been, you know, they were at the bottom of the table fighting for survival and everything. I guess it would have been easier to come and they were like mid-table and...
you're right, it would have been easier. But at the same time, there's always challenges and things that you're figuring out in a football club and in any organisation. When you try and drive things forward, you're making changes, and with change comes, you know, opposition to things, it comes uncertainty, all of those things, and you have to try and work through them. So it doesn't change the process of what you need to do and how you operate. I think the end goal changed, and the end goal becomes different. So for us now, it's about, okay, we know what we want to do. We know where we want to get towards, and we know, I think, what we need to do to get there. And that was obviously a different target when you go into the Norderbettliga than it would have been in Superliga.
James, you have come to Aalborg with quite a lot of football experiences in your trunk. I think we should talk a little bit about your way getting here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but because you started actually quite early, as 16-year-old.
Yes,
as a volunteer coach.
Yeah.
in Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're from Liverpool, so
yes.
I guess football has always been around you.
Yeah, there's football is in your blood in Liverpool, and it was probably until, you know, I got a little bit older and I left Liverpool, the city, that you start to realise actually football isn't as much as an obsession in other places as it is in Liverpool. You know, when you're a young boy growing up in Liverpool, all you want is to be a professional football player. All you want to do is play for Liverpool. Some less smart people want to play for Everton, but the majority, they want to play for Liverpool. And I was lucky enough at a young age to go to Liverpool as a volunteer. I was working with Liverpool's community programme. We were coaching kids and adults with disabilities, and also coaching in, you know, lower socioeconomic, high crime areas. And I loved it. You know, you were representing Liverpool, but trying to move something forward and inspire people with the crest of the club. And that was a big responsibility to bear at a young age, and one that I felt really, actually, probably the first stages helped me develop as a coach and a communicator, because you have to find different ways to interact with different people and get them on your side and these things. And it was a really good learning ground at a young age. And after that, I was fortunate enough to join the academy. I had a period with the first team as well as an analyst. And
how was that working with the first team? Because that must have been special for you growing up in Liverpool and then get to work for Liverpool.
It was...
Since you didn't get to play with them.
No, I wasn't a professional football player, you know, so I sort of knew around 16 I was not a bad player, but I also knew that my career is probably going to be in the professional game. So I put a lot of focus and attention into that. And then at 19, I got an internship with Liverpool as an analyst. Kenny Dalglish was the manager. Steven Gerrard was the captain. Jamie Carragher was the central defender. Luis Suarez was the centre forward. You know, so when you're that young and you go into a training ground like Liverpool's, a multi-million pound training ground, the first thing that happened, Steven Gerrard was at the door. He opened the door for me, and I was this 19-year-old kid had driven in my Fiat Punto. Behind me was an Aston Martin. In front of me was a Lamborghini, you know. And you're going into this environment that I'd never been involved in that before. So it was surreal, but it teaches you a lot. You know, you understand what elite looks like. You understand it sounds funny, but you understand how to work. What does it mean to work in a top environment? You see these top professionals, these people who are at the top of their trade, whether they be sports science, whether they be analysts, coaches, players. You see how they do their work day in, day out, how they plan, how they review. And you realise, okay, this is a big football club, and you know, you're expected to come in here and work hard, and that's what you've got to do.
I guess when you go to Liverpool, and as a young person, you're part of quite a big squad,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
What was your role there as an analyst? Were you hurt? You know, were you taken? Because I guess you were not the only analyst.
No. There was three of us, two of my close friends that went in. Jordan Whelan, who's now with the England national team, and then Bradley Wall, who's now with England, Rangers, Wolves, now he's with Manchester City. So the three of us started as interns together. We were studying at university together, and in charge was Andy Skuld, now assistant sporting director in Tottenham Hotspur. So Andy had a team of us working with him to provide him content. So I wouldn't go and speak to the manager, for example. You know, that wasn't part of my job. My job was to provide specific amounts of data or video or reviewing and planning to Andy, who would then provide that detail into the coaching staff. But you know, you do have interactions which are quite surreal. Steven Gerrard would come into the analysis room after a match and ask for his clips, you know. So you're giving video to the captain of England and the guy who's captain Liverpool, one of the best players in the world, and he's still asking for his video clips from the games to see what he did well and what he didn't. And you know, so you're in and around that all that elite all the time.
I actually wrote to you if you had a few a good anecdote from, yeah, Liverpool, because I know a lot of Danish and some probably also some of our listeners are Liverpool fans.
Yeah.
So have you thought about one?
Yeah. There's a couple of things. You know, there was the first time I met Kenny Dalglish, I thought I was meeting this kind of figure that was almost superhuman, you know. And like I'd been told all my life, you're meeting King Kenny, and that's his name. And when I met him, he had a cup of soup in his hand, and he wasn't wearing any shoes. He used to walk around in the training ground in his socks without with a cup of soup. But then one other thing that always stood out for me was a guy called Mike Marsh. He became assistant first team coach, and he was under 18s coach when I first joined. And I was the analyst, but I could come out sometimes and join in with little bits of training or help with this as well, because I was doing my coaching badges. And my job at the time was just to pass footballs into the session. That was it. I think in the under-18s at the time, there was Suso, and there was Raheem Sterling and other guys, you know, good football players, really good football players. And all I had to do was pass the ball into the session every time the ball went out. And one time I just was mesmerised by watching the game. I was just watching it, so like I couldn't believe the quality the players were producing, and I forgot to pass the ball in. And Mike Marsh turned to me, he said, "James, if you effing do that one more time, you'll be in the sheds." And it stood out to me because, like, I see it now, you know, if in our sessions with the first team players, you make one slip and they're on you. Because that's what elite is. It's everything is important. Every touch, every pass, every aspect of planning, everything is important, because it all goes into how you win football matches on a Saturday. And it always stuck with me.
You had quite a few years at Liverpool, but it wasn't at Millwood.
Correct. Yeah. Millwood, yeah, was the first team training ground.
Yeah, but you went abroad for Liverpool as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so
yeah.
and was in South Africa.
I did a visit to South Africa two times. Yes.
Yes, yeah. and then you went to open the academy in China.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. What was that assignment? What did that consist of?
So Liverpool and I suppose several other world famous football clubs, they want to leave a footprint in different parts of the world. They've got fans in different parts of the world. You know, Liverpool played in Australia a few years ago. There was 100,000 fans in the ground. They go and play in Singapore, 60,000 fans. So the club want to reach out to these people around the world, and it's not always possible for fans to come to Anfield, for example. So as part of that remit, Liverpool will link with local partners to develop a specific project. So I was fortunate enough to work on two full-time projects. I was setting up the academy in China, and then I set up also the academy in Australia. And the remit was to develop a football academy that worked in the same curriculum and philosophy of Liverpool FC, bring in local coaches, develop them, bring in local players, develop them, and hopefully help to grow football in the area. So that was the core remit of it.
Did it go well?
Yeah. I think it was a real success. You know, Liverpool had an academy in China for quite a number of years. We had one in Australia for 4.5 years. They've got multiple academies around the world in different countries. And I suppose that the measure of success is always something interesting because, you know, in Australia, for example, we had a program that I would consider competed with the best in the country. You know, we had a link with a university. They put a lot of money into the program, but we also recruited top people. We also developed top people, and then that in turn helped to develop players. You know, one player went on, played on for the national team. Other players got, you know, professional contracts, and then other players were just inspired by football to be better people. And I think that's also important because football at the junior level, of course, is about helping players to go on to realise their dream as professionals, but the percentage of players that become professionals is so small. So you have to make it important for those that are there that won't become professionals. You know, do they find it meaningful? Do they develop life skills? Do they learn how to win? Do they learn how to lose? Do they learn how to be more organised? You know, there's so much that football can teach that even in a professional level, when you're trying to produce professional football players, you need to still remember that you're dealing with young individuals. So I think we had a real success there.
And that led you to Al Jazeera?
Yes.
In
Abu Dhabi?
In Abu Dhabi, yeah. And that's where you, I think, I read that it was a Danish guy, Mads Davidsen.
Yes.
Eller Mads Davidsen, as we'll call him.
Mads Davidsen, as
we'll call him here in Denmark, who put up that connection for you.
Yeah.
And that was that a similar job to the one you did in China and Australia, or how did it differ from that?
Yeah, funny how things work, because I visited Aalborg 10 years ago with Liverpool, and we were delivering some courses here. I met a guy called Kenneth Courtson. I think you know Kenneth. And Kenneth introduced me to Mads Davidsen when I was moving to China. Me and Mads connected, and we built, a professional relationship over time. We had a respect for each other's work and would share ideas. But he was working for Sven-Göran Eriksson at the time. And after about 7-8 years, we remained in touch, you know, on, I'd say on a professional level, but that was, you know, we got on really well. He called me and said, look, I'm thinking of making some changes in Al Jazeera. Would you be interested in coming in to be the academy technical director? And I'd always really respected Mass's work. I think Mass is an exceptional operator, one of the best, you know, around in that sporting director strategic position. And I said, yeah, for sure. You know, the opportunity to work with Mass to take on a new cultural challenge. I like working in different environments. I also knew that the academy needed a lot of help and support and development, and I like those challenges, you know, how do you drag people up and help drive them forward. So the remit was different in that when I was with Liverpool abroad, my job was to really create a good well-being and a good understanding of Liverpool in the area. Whereas when I went to Al Jazeera, it was all on my shoulders about, James, you need to make sure the academy functions and you need to make sure that you get players in the first team. And that's the remit of the academy. And, you know, we had 100 staff. We had, you know, 1,000 players across several different sites and different programs. So it was a different responsibility, but a different focus results, I would say. And with the different results, you have different things that you need to do.
James, what were the results in Al Jazeera? How did it go?
I think we had a window where we operated to our maximum, and that meant that we were given freedom to go and do the things that needed to be done, take the difficult decisions, take the decisions that some people don't often like, you know, and that's a part of being in a leadership position. You have to make those calls, but ultimately to get more success on the pitch. And you know, we look back at that, and Mass and I spoke about it recently, but we feel like we did a lot of really good things for the club. We got 13 players from the academy into the first team in one season. You know, that was a record that the club have ever had. But we did that because we knew what needed to be done. We had to put more training around the players. We had to get them in the training ground sometimes, two times per week at 6:30 in the morning, which was, you know, we were the most hated men in the world. But then once you make your first team appearance at a quicker rate, you're forgiven, you know. So that was one of the big things that we tried to do, is push youth, local talent through, make them better, get them in front of the first team head coach and get them into the team or get them making appearances. And when we look back at that, we're really fond of what we did there.
Why did it stop down there?
Football's an interesting one, and things change quickly, you know, and we both felt it was probably a short-term thing, if we're both honest, because I think, you know, in some parts of the world, you don't have the same amount of time to implement things as you'd like to, and then you get people interfering and starting to change things. And so it was, for me, it was the right time to decide, okay, I'm ready for something fresh, because I want to be somewhere where I can really feel like we're moving forward, and I want to be somewhere where you're surrounded by people who are on the same mission as you, you know, people that want the absolute best. And I felt we had a great time there, but I was ready for something else.
And that something else came up was OB.
Yeah.
And now we heard how your road was here. You know, why did you choose OB? As you said, you've been here 10 years ago, yeah. but it probably wasn't just because of that.
No, it wasn't just because of that. I came 10 years ago and I loved the place. I loved the city. I really enjoyed the football club. And I actually visited again 5 years later. The honest truth was that the investment company coming in with the current sporting director, Ula, they contacted me, and we'd started chatting about things. We had similar values and similar principles and things, and Ula's, for me, he's an exceptional guy. You know, first and foremost, he's an exceptional guy, but he's also an excellent operator. And I had a lot of respect for his work and what he'd done previously in Hamburg. And he told me about the project, told me about the idea, told me about, you know, we want to develop local talent. You know, I come from Liverpool, where it's so important that you get local talent through into the first team, and that's an absolute core fundamental of the club. And when I heard that and heard the scope and who I'd be working with and what we'd be looking to do, then that really sold it to me.
What do you consider as the main thing that you come with to OB? Now we heard all about your career, but which part of that career can you give? Which parts of that career can you give to OB? Or which element of that do you have to use here?
I mean, look, I'm somebody that's really passionate about the job. You know, I care so much about the job that I almost become obsessed and addicted to the job, which is unhealthy in some ways and then many very healthy in other ways, you know. But I think if you're passionate about something that you care about, then you're a lucky person, and you know, you're working on something that's really for you. For me, what I think I'm good at is I think I find ways to drive teams forward and groups of people forward. I find ways to help people be successful and look for ways to drive people forward. I've always thought of, there's key pillars that you want to have in place to motivate people and inspire people, and that's mastery. Make them better. Find ways to make them better. Autonomy. Give them the opportunity to go and execute their work. And then purpose. Why are we here? What are we getting out of bed for every single day? And I like to think that I put a lot of time and effort into those things. And it sounds simple, but there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that I think I've got strengths in trying to align all of that, you know, to show where we want to go and how we're going to get young players through into the first team and how we're going to be successful on the pitch, how we're going to be well organised off the pitch. I'm a big guy who focuses on impulse during the week. You know, what the fans say at the weekend is 90 minutes on the pitch. But what we do as staff behind the scenes is many, many, many hours of work to make sure that we are fully prepared for what happens on a Saturday, and we've got plan A and we've got plan B and we've got different scenarios planned out, and we're ready to go and execute the game.
You spent quite a few hours, quite a lot of hours at OB so far. In the beginning, I heard you're practically at work all the time, James, when I ask people about you. But what have you, if you have to put it concretely, what have you been doing so far?
You know what? There's so many things that go into being successful in a football club. The first real thing that I did after the Silky Ball game was commission a piece of research. And that piece of research was, what's it going to take for us to get promoted back into the Superliga? That was the first thing, because I needed to know, where have we been? Where do we need to go, and what does that look like? So we looked at the last three seasons of the teams that have been promoted. How many goals have they scored? How many set-piece goals have they scored? From which areas do they score those goals? How many goals do they concede? How many goals do you have to keep out? How many clean sheets do you have to attain? What does that mean in terms of XG for, XG against? What does that mean in terms of structuring the team on the pitch? And then looking at what we did last season. Okay, so this, we scored 30 goals last season. How many do we want to score this season? You know, or we conceded X amount last season. How many do we need to cut out this season? What's the difference? And then once we know that difference, how are we going to get there? So, you know, there's different things that we really looked into that we thought we could be really sharp in. And, you know, when we were recruiting new staff, we looked for certain things. You know, we're going into the Nordic Bet League, and rightly so, teams want to come and try and beat Obi or get a result against Obi, and they'll try lots of different things to do that. Last season we were a team that were relegated for a reason, you know, we can't deny that, but now we're a team that's having to find solutions against low blocks, find solutions against teams that want to slow the game down. We've got to score more goals, a lot more goals than we scored last season. So when we're recruiting new staff, okay, Mathias Haugesen, under 20 national team coach at Norway, why is he the right fit for Obi? And we interviewed a lot of people, did a lot of research on a lot of people, but he's excellent in coaching in the attacking phases. He's got a track record of working with young players and developing them. He's really good in set pieces, all of these things. So we used that piece of information at the start, the research, to inform what we're doing. And then what I do now is every week I track that. And I sit with, and we talk with the staff about that. You know, we set some real clear targets for pre-season. What does this mean now? How do we practice these things that we want to put into place for next season? And what does it mean now?
So if right now we haven't scored from a corner kick for quite a few weeks on the Super League team, that's what you sat down with Haugesen, and then I said, what are we doing wrong right now?
I wouldn't sit down and say, what are we doing wrong? I look at the process, you know.
Okay,
what's the process that goes into being successful? You know, because we all want to win on the South. Everyone wants to win. I want to win more than anybody. You know, I love winning games of football, but that's not enough. You've got to have a clear set of processes that allow you to be successful. And that's what high performance is doing that over and over again, and challenging and checking what we're doing. So we've actually scored 8 goals from set pieces in 8 games. That's fantastic. You know, and I know what the target is. The club know what the target is. That's not the target just yet, but we're definitely on track with that, because you've got to score goals in different ways. So I wouldn't sit with Matthias and say, you know, what's going wrong here? But we'd look at it together as a group and say, okay, what's the solutions for this? Can we be cleaner in our preparation? Can we be smarter in looking at the opponent? Can we think about training methods a little bit different? Do we need to spend more time there? Do we need more time in the video room? You know, there's a whole host of different things, but two things that I really like to talk about are check and challenge. This idea of checking and challenge, like all the time, we should be in a proper elite environment. We should be checking and challenging each other all the time. Oscar goes and delivers a session. I'll speak to him and say, why did you do that? What do you think about this? Could this be better? Could that be sharper? And we debate over it. We argue over it. We discuss it. and then we find a resolution at the end. Okay, yeah, this is good. Or sometimes I just challenge him just to be a bit of a pain in the ass, to be honest with you. I'll just ask him certain things, but that means that he's constantly having to justify, okay, why do I do this, why do I do that? Because we know that our job is to go out and perform on the weekend and make sure that we put a show on for the fans and hopefully get the result that we need. But to do that, the input is so important.
What has been, I asked you beforehand, what has been, you know, the most important things for you after you have checked OB, if you've researched everything, you know, for about a half a year, seen about the club? What was the most important thing for you going in to correct?
So
on the basis of everything you saw?
So, firstly is, don't just change something for the sake of it, right? Understand why we're making change. And you know, there's a good saying, progress is impossible without change. So you have to find ways to evolve and change, and with that there comes a process of resistance or question or uncertainty. But of course, when you're a team that's relegated, you've been relegated for a reason. So I had an idea of where we could be better, but I also had to speak to the staff. They, you know, I only had the idea from the outside, not from the inside. So you have to come in and understand what the mechanisms that we're working from, what the processes that we're working from, how much time are we spending on things, what does the squad look like, how do we want to play the game, and make that clear. So I think one thing that, if you mentioned it before, there was a lot of chaos clearly in you know, different managers and head coaches and these things. You need clarity. People need to know, well, what's my role here within this organization? And I think that's what we've tried to do as a group, is give clarity. You know, it's not just me, there's a group of us who try and execute these things. But okay, what do we need, and who needs to be there? What are the roles for Matthias? What are the roles for the new analyst? What are the roles for Rasmus Wirtz, who looks after the transition group? You know, all of these things, I think what we have to do is give real clarity, direction in terms of where we want to go. It has to be clear, this is what we want to do. You know, this is the demands of the club, and then understand how we're going to get there.
When you have these goals, of course, as a technical director, you have a lot of focus areas. Mm. If we take training example, what have you changed in the training in OB, for an example?
Okay.
What culture did you see, and where should they go?
Look, I have to say, I think we've got a coach in Oscar who's top class. Like, I think he's top class in many different areas, and he's excellent on the pitch, he's excellent off the pitch, he's a leader. Me and Oscar, we will go through the finer details of training together. I'll review what he's doing on the pitch. Why are we doing this type of session? Can we do more of this type of session? Can we put more focus on this? I think the real thing for us was clarifying how we want to play the game. Okay, so what's our style of play need to look like? Because if you don't have a clear style of play of where you want to get towards, now it doesn't necessarily have to look like that in day one, because it takes time, and it also takes players, it takes coaching. But we have to understand where we really wanted to go. So that was number one, is me and Oscar look at the style of play, and then we say, okay, the things that we're working on in training, do they allow us to see this style of play flourish? Most of the time, yes. Of course, like every single coach in the world, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, there's always ways to be better and sharper. So we discuss them internally, but they're conversations between me and Oscar. They're, you know, they're conversations that I love working with Oscar, because he's open, you know, and he's ready for combat, he's ready for an argument, but he's also willing to change his mind and develop, and that's the sign of somebody for me who's really sharp. And you know, I can probably pick five or six occasions where he and I have gone into his office, we've got the board out or we've got the video out, and we've started to argue, why are we building up with one player, or why are we building up with two players? Okay, do we need to do more of this in training? We brought a drone into our training session. You'll see sometimes there'll be a drone above the training session, and then we sit back and review it after the training session. So we have a thorough process. I wouldn't say I've come in and changed things massively, but what I've done is challenged things, and I think I've brought more clarity of the things that we need to be working on. And you know, I also see part of our job to act as guardians for our strategy. So how do we bring young players into the group? You know, how do we set up the squad so that young players come into the group? So you will have seen Mats Bumholt got his debut played again, second game, who's been training with the first team. You know, it's not a coincidence. Sebastian Otoa started the last game. Oliver Ross has made a lot of game time this year, a lot more than he had last year. Not a coincidence, because we're starting to set things up and have these conversations all the time. How do we get these young boys through?
What kind of you said you'd have the talks with Oscar about how what style OB should have. Of course, you have your footprint on that as well. What kind of football do you want OB to play, and does it have to, you know, go down through the whole academy as well?
Yeah, so my job is to oversee first team and academy football operations, which I think is quite a unique thing for the club to have, is that they want to show clear alignment through all the different age groups. You know, I think it's clear we want to be a team that will want to press the ball. We want to be a team that has a lot of possession of the ball. When we lose it, we want to counter-press quickly. We want to have different solutions to build up, but we want to attack. We want games of football where we go out and win and score goals. And it, you know, of course, it takes time to evolve into that. But we track that every week. How we play in different areas. How many times do we enter the opposition final third? How many sprints do we make in a game? Because they all contribute towards playing that style of football. So the style we want to play is you know, we want to win the ball back quickly, and we want to attack quickly, and we want to build in different ways, make runs in behind. But the key is, how do you get there? You know, the statement is just hallucination without execution. You know, it's got the vision's clear, but we've got to execute that all the time, and that comes down to what we do on the pitch, how often we check and challenge each other, how much time we put into planning, preparing, and reviewing. We do that all the time, continuously.
How far are you from where we want to be at the moment, considering the playing style?
I don't want to put an exact time on it. I don't want to say, no. You know, 20 days or 20 years. No. You know, we're not there yet. Like we know there's space to improve, and that's a cool place to be, because we're winning games of football. You know, we know we're doing really well in certain areas. You know, one of the big pillars for us was to concede less goals. We have, you know, that's really important. But we also want to be a team that's really exciting to watch, and a team that creates chances. But I've seen some periods of the game where I think, wow, that's really, like, that's what I want us to look like, and that's what I know Oscar wants us to look like in the club. We're just going to keep evolving and pushing that, and hopefully we see that more and more often.
When you see OB change formation in these games they've played recently, what is the plan with that, if you have a defined playing style?
Yeah, so formation for me is one of those things that's probably spoken about too much. Because when you go onto the football pitch, things are so fluid, because the opponent might build up with a back three, or they might build up with a back four, or they might defend with a back five or a back six, which we face a lot this year, right? Or they might defend with a back four. So based on that, you start to alter positions. So I think what we're really pushing is that we want to be principle-led. You know, do we switch the ball from strong to weak often? Do we create third-man runs? Do we make runs in behind? That's important. That doesn't matter whether you play with a back three or a back four. But it's what's important about it is that you can see your principles in the game. We want to play vertical. We want to be a team that isn't allowed the ball to be played through. We want to force to the side, and then we want to win the ball back, and then we want to counter attack quickly. It doesn't matter whether you play a four or a five at the back. But that's the key for us, is around principles. Now, you're always going to have tactical tweaks in how you build up. You know, you will have seen last game Sebastian Otoa. Built with a back three instead of maybe a back two, but that also then gave us a little bit more dominance on the side. But it also meant that Otoa was really good at stepping in with the ball, and he can find solutions forward. But then you release one of the number sixes, for example. So we've sometimes built with four, sometimes we built with the back three, sometimes we built with two and two. There's different ways to do it, but it's about what the solution is required within the game.
We could talk a lot more about this, James, but I promised you that I wouldn't hold you here for the entire afternoon.
So, me as long as you want.
So I'll just move on to something else, because one of the important things in your job as well is the academy, as yeah. we already talked about. There's been a bit of criticism, would I say, of OB's academy the last few years. They did not make enough talents, and there were not enough grade A talent going through, and so on and forth. And what is it you've seen in the academy in OB, and what is the potential there as you see it?
Mm. I think there is talent within the academy, for sure. I think there's talent as I look through the various age groups, and you look at the first team at the moment as a good example of lots of players in the first team from the academy. Now I understand you say, okay, maybe over the last few years not as many. I'd be confident that there's certainly a pipeline of young players who've got potential. It's our job as a club to make sure that we open those pathways up for them. You know, so and there's so many layers to that. You know, Jens, is that when you're looking at the first team squad, and you're looking to, okay, let's say whatever position we need a new centre back, for example, the first question should be, who have we got in the building? So do we look externally or do we look internally? For us, we should look internally. Okay, look into the under-19s, who's there? Yeah, we've got a player. Okay, what do we need to do to develop him to be ready to play into the first team? Okay, let's say there's nobody there, for example, right? Well, when's the next high potential first team player going to come through? Might be under 15, under 17, whatever that may be. So are we creating a pathway for that player to come through? Now, the other thing is that you've got to have excellent coaches and excellent people around them and continuously push and develop and nurture and understand development. I look at the academy, I think we've got, of course, as every football club does, have areas to be better, but also we've got a lot of good things and a lot of things that can work to our advantage.
What's the main thing that you have gone in and seen, this I have to do with the academy, first of all? You know, like at the top of your priority list. Yeah.
Understand what we've got in the building. You know, I don't go in and change something without understanding everything. You know, I'm 3 months into the job. I would say I've built up an understanding of the staff and building up an understanding of the players. I think one thing that we have to be really sharp in is alignment. Aligning how we want to play, aligning how we want to develop, aligning how we plan, how we review and how we execute training sessions. The things that we see in training sessions day in, day out, are they going to help to produce the player that is going to be one day a Super League player, or is it going to one day be hopefully a national team player? Because that should be the aim. So there's a million different things I could go into. You know, it's about where we're doing well, but other things that you have to look at. Well, how do we do physically? How do we do psychologically? What do we do technically, tactically? All of these things we can be better in, as every club can be.
But there must be one thing, James, where you said this must be better for us to evolve as an academy. This one or two things.
I think one thing that we're putting increased focus on now, and I think we're lucky to have, is a transition coach. So a guy who oversees the individual development of talents at 17 and 19 years old, and puts increased focus into them. You know, we've got Rasmus Wirtz, who's an ex-national team player, ex-OB player, an excellent person, first and foremost. But part of Rasmus's job is to ensure that Mats Bomholt is getting the support that he needs, is that Oliver Ross is getting the support he needs. So for example, like I can go into a little bit of depth here. Every few weeks we have a meeting with every department in under 19, under 17, and importantly the first team. The first team coach is part of these meetings, and we discuss the young players that we've got coming through. What do they need for us to help them to be as successful as they possibly can be? What do they need to be to develop and maximise their potential? So sports science will input. Okay, Oliver needs X, Y, and Z. This is where he's strong. This is where we can improve him. The mental coach will talk, okay, I think he needs this. Then, okay, technically, this is what he needs to work on. Tactically, this is what he needs to work on. And then what we do is we take that away, we discuss it with Oliver, and we say, these are the things that you need to do. But Rasmus is the core person for that. We plan things for him, and then we review every single day. So we have a report system. Where after every single training session, we'll make a report to say, okay, this is what he's doing well, this is where we can help him develop. But we're reviewing that constantly. And that, for me, is something that we've probably put our focus into over the last few months, and something that I think we're doing really well, and credit to Rasmus and the whole team, because you know we really care about these young players.
I've been for the last 20 minutes or so trying to pinpoint places where you have the where there are problems, you know, in Obi. So, what have you come in now we're going to have to talk about something positive, because what have you come into Obi and seen and been positively surprised about?
Number one, the fans are amazing. You know, I have to say is that, you know, that we played Betrayal Fems, and my Danish was good there, but we played with Betrayal Fems first game of the season, you know, seeing 1500 fans there. We play away at Hub Road, the on a Thursday night, and the stands full. The power of the fans is so important. Like that's amazing to see. And you know, I think we all get into football because we love seeing stadiums full, and we love hearing the crowd singing, and that gives such an energy boost to the players and the staff. So that'll be number one. I think we've got a really positive atmosphere within the club now. You know, when you get relegated, everything's doom and gloom. We even thought it was important to win games in pre-season because we wanted the players to get that winning feeling back, you know, and that was something that we actually said, well, this is something we want to put focus into. Now, of course, most part of pre-season, you're not about winning games, and that's not the core objective, of course, but that was one of the things that we wanted to do. So I feel like we've got good spirit in the club. I feel like the club means a lot to people. Like when you speak to somebody at Obi, you've got people who've been there for 30 years and it means so much to them. And rightly so, you know, it's part of people's identity, it's part of the city's identity. I think that would be one of the biggest things, is the passion for the club is so strong in the people that we've got there.
Are you surprised by that? Because you come from a place where there's a lot of passion about the town club, yeah, and has a lot of history as well.
Yeah, I was, to be honest, I knew there was passion there, and I'd seen the games and these things, but I was probably surprised just how passionate everybody in the club was about the club, how much it meant to them, and what I think that says to us, people who are new to the club and come from the outside, as you will, we've got a big responsibility to live up to here. You know, we've got a huge responsibility to live up to because it means a lot to so many people. I remember one story about when I was at Liverpool, and we had an old coach there at Liverpool. I remember him talking to one of the players, and he said, look, you see that guy over there? He said this to one of the players because he wasn't training hard enough. He said, you see this guy over there? He said, yeah. Do you know what his job is? He said, no. He said, he goes into a factory. He puts the board down, puts a bit of metal on it, moves it along the line. Next one comes, gets the board, puts a little bit of metal on it, moves it along the line. He said, the one thing that gets him so motivated and inspired is going to watch his football team at the weekends, come to watch Liverpool. So you make sure you train damn hard for him because it means so much to him. And that's our job, you know, that we have to make sure that the club is successful for the fans and everybody involved.
Nobody probably told you that this would be an easy job, but are you positively surprised or negatively surprised by how big a task you have at hand at OB?
No, I didn't underestimate it. You know, I knew I was coming into a big club. Everybody knows Aalborg, you know. Everybody you speak to from abroad, they know Aalborg, and I knew it was a big task. And I wanted a big task. I thrive off a big task, and that's what I enjoy. But I'm inspired by the group that we've got who want to drive us forward, because I think we've got a lot of knowledge and a lot of passion in the group, and I do think we can move forward.
James, one thing we have not been around yet is the transfer window, which closed for about a week ago. Was it a difficult window for you to execute because of all the players that had to go out and... you know, didn't have as much money maybe for players going in.
It's an interesting one, because I think every club has different challenges within the transfer windows, and we're no different. You know, we know what we had in place, we know what we wanted to add to the squad. One of the first things that we did was introduce a committee. You know, we have Julius Nagel, who oversees our recruitment and squad planning, but there's a group of us that input to that. So there was a lot of debates about what do we need and also what players can we allow to leave, because we had a fairly big squad. And one of the things that we want to do is create opportunities for young players to come through. And if the squad's too big, then that might restrict some of those opportunities, and we want to create playing time for those young guys. So we had to look into depth about, okay, I mentioned it before, how do we want to play football? That should always be the basis. What style do we want to play football? And then once you know that, you can also figure out, well, what does each position require? So if you want to be a team that presses the ball, for example, long term you're going to need speed at the back, because if you're pressing the ball high up the pitch, you need speed further back in the pitch. If you want a team that's able to build up the game with the goalkeeper, then you're going to need a goalkeeper that's got core competencies with his feet. So we looked at what we've got, and we looked at, okay, what do we need to add, and then started to figure that out. And there's, to tell you about the transfer window, it's about 10 million plates that are constantly spinning. You know, and it's a tricky job, and Julio's done an amazing job, I think, and you know, to get the squad balanced and get to a place where it is now. And yeah, there's lots of challenges in there, you know, for sure.
One of the challenges, and we've been talking about this quite a lot before, on earlier episodes with the other sporting directors in Aalborg and so on, is that sometimes they maybe underestimate the Danish league, and that was of course the Super League back in the good old days when nobody was up there. But how have you made sure that the players that you're bringing in will have what it takes to do it in the Danish league, and now it's the first division, but in Danish football?
I think there's many factors to that, because it's a great question, because the league is a good league, you know, it's not a bad league at all. And I think if you're really from the outside, you think, well, Danish First Division, what's it all about? But it's a good league, and there's good quality in there, good coaches in there, and you've got to be prepared every game. So one of the things that we looked at was, when we bring in a player, we have a committee, so we all talk about that player. We look at that player's history, where have they played, what are their big qualities and attributes, and are they going to be able to cope with living in a certain part of Denmark when the weather gets freezing cold and it's wet, it's windy and it's rainy, and then they've got to go out and perform? And are they going to be able to cope with that? Because that's important. And to understand that, we have multiple conversations with the player. We also do our research with people that we know and connections in the game. What do you think about this guy? Has he got the right personality? And that's one thing that, you know, our coach speaks about a lot is you know, we've got these things that drive us. We want an all-in mentality. So we want, when you come to the training, we want you to give everything on the football pitch. But that's also a core characteristic then that we've got to find out about that player that we're bringing in. So Melka, for example, you know, Oscar's got great contacts because he's Swedish. We did some background research in there. We spoke to the player. We asked him questions. Why do you want to come to Aalborg? What can you do to come to Aalborg? Because it's a big responsibility. How are you going to perform? And then we've got to figure those things out. And, you know, you've seen other players come in, Richard and Diego, and they've had to take a little bit of time to adapt and get up to the rhythm, because we're putting big demands on the players in training session. But now you see they're also performing in games. So I think when we reflect back, there's lots of things that we're pleased about. But, you know, we can't lie, there's always challenges in a transfer market, because if you've got good players, other teams want them, and that's, you know, you've got to figure out, okay, can we really let this player go, or, you know, how do we get this player the support he needs to make sure that he can perform? There's so many different things involved in it.
When you get, you mentioned Diego Caballo as well. When you get a player like him, get him from Australia, he's a Spanish guy. Wouldn't there be a more safe shot than him?
Sure.
Yeah.
Without doubt. I mean, look, there's safer shots than everybody. And the question is, are those, you have a certain amount that you can utilize, and you have a certain profile that you need to look for, and then you also have other clubs who are after certain players as well. You might have six clubs after the exact same player. With Diego, he'd moved away from Spain to Australia. He'd had a really excellent football education. Real Madrid, he came through there. We knew he had a top football education. He'd had a number of clubs in Spain. But then, of course, you've got to talk to the boy, and you've got to do your research on the guy as well. And we spoke to Diego, top guy, real good attitude, good mentality. and also the research that we've done on him before that, we got really good references. So that was part of it. But then also, like, I'm really happy with Diego's moving towards. I think he's got some excellent qualities that everyone can see now, you know, on the football pitch. But also, there will be times where maybe a player does come in and he isn't as successful as other people, as people expect him to be. But tell me one football club in the world that has never signed a player that's not a 100% success. For us, with a, you know, a limited, I wouldn't say limited budget, but with us, with what we've got available to us, we have to be really sharp on who we bring in. So we do a lot of homework, you know, because we want to make sure that player comes in, he's got to perform.
If you have to rate your transfer window, which is your first at OB, let's say from 1 to 10, how pleased are you with what you did?
I don't know, to be honest with you, because that's it's actually a meeting that we've got coming up, is to reflect back on the transfer window. Yeah. And look, the honest truth is that we're pleased with many things about it, and you know, we were working day and night. We were finding solutions to constantly changing, evolving challenges, which, you know, stuff in football clubs is because you're dealing with lots of personalities and you're dealing with other people who want your players and all these types of things. You've just got to be ready to deal with those challenges and contend with them and find real strong solutions to those. So I wouldn't say I'd give it a rating out of 10 just yet, but I think what we want to be judged on is a number of transfer windows, and when we look back in a few years' time, have we made consistently good decisions, I would say.
You have been, as we said earlier, quite a few places, James. How long do you think you would be at Aalborg?
I hope for quite some time. You know, I had sustained periods of time at, you know, I'd spent a lot of time at Liverpool, and you know, even when I was in Australia with Liverpool, I was there for 4 years. You know, I hope for a long time, because I know that one, things do take time to put into play. Of course, you know, we want to be successful in the short term. We want to be successful medium and long term. But as long as the club are happy with what I do, and you know, I believe in myself, and I believe in that I can help make positive change, then I want to be here as long as I possibly can, and help the club get back to where it should be.
How different is OB from the other places you've been?
I found always a unique place, because it's a city with one club, really, you know, one big professional club. So it makes, in some ways, the expectations even higher, you know, because you're everybody you meet in Aalborg is an Aalborg fan. So I think there's it's unique in that way. But also, there's a big family atmosphere, I think, about the club. It's a big community aspect to it. You know, you can feel that the club has, it's ingrained within the city, and the city is ingrained within the club, and I think that's something quite unique.
James, if we meet, let's say, in about half a year or a year, what would you like to tell me that you have done in OB? If I ask you then, James, what are you most proud of you have done here in your, let's say, first year in OB?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And, yeah,
you know, there's always things that you want to share with people, and there's always things that you don't want to share with people.
Yep.
And you don't want to hear a boring answer, and I don't want to give a boring answer. I suppose that the thing for me is I want to see the team winning, okay? But I also want to see the team performing, and we want the two to go hand in hand. Everybody talks about winning, and that's the end goal for everybody. So I hope that we're in a good moment in that way at first team level. But also, what's really important to me, and part of my job, is to say that we're playing in a certain way. We're enabling opportunity for homegrown players to come through and perform. And hopefully we can have a group that's inspired from the top to the bottom of the club.
Og så fik vi sagt farvel til James Gau, og så skal jeg sige goddag til dig, Simon.
Hej, Jens Otto.
Hej, og det vi lige skal snakke om, det er to ting. Vi skal først lige snakke lidt om, hvad der er sket ude på OB på det seneste, og så skal vi se frem mod den her topkamp, som OB spiller fredag aften på udebane mod Sønderjyske. Men først så synes jeg lige, vi skal se tilbage på nogle af de ting, der er sket siden sidst vi optog. Det var jo i kølvandet på
kampen mod Kolding. Og en af de ting, jeg i hvert fald har bidt mærke i, det er, at Allan Sousa-handlen jo er sådan endegyldigt faldet på plads, og han skal til Al Ula i den tredje bedste saudiske række. Simon, at det bliver den tredje bedste række i Saudi-Arabien, hvad siger du til det?
Ja, det kom lidt bag på mig, at det var den, at vi er helt nede i den tredje bedste række. Jeg skal være ærlig at sige, at jeg har ikke det store kendskab til den næstbedste og tredje bedste saudiske række, og jeg skal ikke kan sige, hvor højt eller lavt niveauet er der, men sådan set ud fra, så ja, det kommer der lidt bag på mig, men altså omvendt med alle de spillere, der bliver hentet ind fra øverste hylde til den bedste saudiske række, så er det måske der, at en profil for Superligaen efterhånden kan gøre sig håb om at havne.
Der var tale om både undervejs Brøndby og alt muligt for Allan Sousa. Der var angiveligt mange bejler, men virker det her på dig en kende uambitiøst? Rent sportsligt i hvert fald.
Ja, det vil man altid kunne argumentere for. Altså, jeg vil jo så vente, når man siger, jeg kan jo måske godt forstå, at Sousa gør det. Fordi at hvis han kan tjene nogle penge, som kan sikre ham og hans familie langt ud i fremtiden, jamen så tror jeg måske også, at der er et incitament til at gøre det på den måde.
Men kunne man ikke have håbet på, at Sousa han ville have valgt en anden dansk klub, altså at være blevet i Superligaen? Fordi det er vel tab for et eller andet sted i hvert fald. Første division er der i hvert fald hans mutter, men også for Superligaen, så at sige.
Altså, jo, det
ved jeg. Han er en sjov spiller.
Ja, men han er da en underholdende spiller at se på, men jeg tror også, der er mange OB-fans, der ville være ked af at skulle se ham i FC Midtjylland, som hvis også var en af de klubber, der havde budt sig til. Så på den konto, så tror jeg måske, det er meget fint, at han havner i Saudi-Arabien.
Simon, udover det, at Allan Sousas arbejdsgiver, der nu er blevet sat navn på den, så er der ikke sket alverden ud på, at de har holdt fri nogle dage her på det seneste.
Jamen, sådan er det jo altid med en landskampspause, men vi kan jo lige hurtigt løbe de landsholdsspillere igennem, som har været afsted. Nu optager vi jo så inden, at Oliver Ross og Otto har spillet den anden kamp mod Frankrig på U20-landsholdet, og inden at Richard Odata, han formentlig er med for Kenya i en landskamp mod Sydsudan her i morgen, tirsdag er det så. Men altså, det der indtil videre står stærkt i billedet, det er, at der har været godt med spilletid til de OB-spillere, der har været afsted. Altså, Bertil Grønkær har for eksempel fået fint med spilletid på U17-landsholdet, og Ross og Otto har vist sig fint frem i den første U20-landskamp mod Frankrig, hvor Ross faktisk også var anfører, og så Odata fik fuld spilletid i en kamp mod Qatar, som Kenya faktisk vandt.
Og en af de ting, som man kan så sige, grund til, at der ikke er sket noget, eller en af de ting, der nej, jeg tager lige af det. Og en af de ting, man så kan sige, at OB-spillerne har kunne gå og bruge tiden på, når de har fri her i nogle dage, der er at kigge på tabellen, og der kan de så se, at de jo, som vi ved, Simon, ligger nummer 1. Men det er jo ikke sikkert, at de gør det efter fredag aften, hvor de skal ned og spille mod Sønderjyske. Hvad skal ikke til topkamp? OB nummer 1 mod nummer 2, Sønderjyske. Hvis vi lige skal runde den kamp, Simon, hvad bliver det så for noget?
Jamen, det bliver jo den, i hvert fald i første divisionsøje med, den største test af OB i den her sæson. Fordi en udekamp mod Sønderjyske anser jeg for at være den største tryktest, som OB de kan komme under. Sådan som turneringen ser ud til at udvikle sig.
Hvad er det, nu du har selvfølgelig set Sønderjyske spille også den her sæson, altså hvad er det, de kan i den her sæson? Fordi de har jo været nede i, det er jo anden sæson. Efter de røg ud, at de er nede.
Jamen, Thomas Nørgaard, deres træner, kom til i vinterpausen, og man må bare sige, at han stille og roligt, men meget stilsikkert, har fået sat noget sammen dernede, som ser ud til at fungere rigtig godt. Han har fået kørt nogle nye spillere ind, blandt andet et par dygtige islandske spillere, og så har han hentet Simon Weber, som han havde i P93 tidligere. Og sådan samlet set, så er der bare blevet hentet kvalitet ind, altså. Kan også tage en Akker, de har hentet i Næstved, som så godt nok, hvis nok er skadet, men altså har gjort det rigtig godt. Bliver også nødt til at tage en spiller som Daniel Gretarsson, som i deres centrale forsvar, som virkelig ligner en forstærkning. Han har så også været skadet, så de har været hårdt ramt af skader nu her, og derfor er det spændende at se, hvilken forfatning de egentlig er i stand til at møde op på fredag.
Skal OB, er det en af de kampe, hvor de skal sige, at et point det er godt nok?
Altså, ud fra devisen, at de sikkert vil gå ud for at angribe, så nej, de skal jo starte med at gå efter 3, men altså, det er da klart, at hvis kampens klima ligger til det, når du kommer hen omkring 80-85, så kan det da godt være, at vi siger, at vi er fint tilfredse med et point på en svær udbane.
Nu er jeg lige kommet i tanke om, så en af de ting, der faktisk også er sket, det var jo OB, de gik videre på pokalturneringen mod VAI, Simon.
Ja, det gjorde de.
Det var en sikker 6-0 sejr over på Aalborg Portland Park, hvor der jo, altså, det er jo vel en af de der pokalkampe, som man siger, det var nok sjovt for VAI at få den oplevelse, mens for resten af os var det bare sådan et, og sikkert også for OB-spillerne, et walk in the park, og ikke den helt store, det helt store sus.
Ja, altså det jeg tager med fra den kamp, det kan jeg lige så godt sige, det har ikke så meget med spillet at gøre. Det var mere det faktum, at der var absolut nul stemning nede på Vesttribunen. Og jeg skal ikke gøre mig til dommer over, om fansene har en god sag, når de valgte at udvandre kort før kampstart. Men jeg vil bare sige, at der fik man i hvert fald at se, hvad stemningen betyder, fordi jeg tror også, at VAI-spillerne havde sat næsen op efter, at de skulle op og opleve en lidt mere sydende og kogende atmosfære, end den de så blev ramt af. Så der håber jeg da godt nok, at OB og Vesttribunen i samspil finder ud af, hvordan man løser det her og kommer videre, fordi at stemningen er ekstremt vigtig for det her samlede indtryk, man har, når man går til fodbold på Aalborg Portland Park.
Ja, så var det selvfølgelig også en kamp, der blev scoret nogle flot mål OB, blandt andet Mel Cavidel, som scorede et nydeligt mål.
Ja, vi kan da sagtens rose ham, fordi par mål, han scorer blandt andet det her langskudsmål, hvor han bare brager den ind. Det så virkelig godt ud.
Men nu, i næste runde af pokalturneringen, der kommer der vel lidt mere modstand til OB?
Potentielt i hvert fald, fordi der har vi jo nogle Superliga-hold, som indtræder. Det var de helt store, så det kunne jo, ja, det kunne godt ende med at blive en sjov test for OB.
Nu kommer jeg lidt på afvej her med pokalturneringen. Nu gælder det så først og fremmest den her udkamp mod Sønderjyske. Simon, skal du lige have lov til at komme? Hvad bliver resultatet? Et bud på resultatet. Kom med det.
Jeg tror, OB vinder 2-1. Jeg er optimistisk på OB's vegne, fordi at der kommer til at være en lidt anden atmosfære omkring den her kamp. Der vil også være OB-spillere, som føler, at det her, det er jo, altså nu skal vi virkelig ud og bevise, at vi er det bedste hold i rækken. Ikke at de ikke ønsker at gøre det, når de møder Fredericia eller Hillerød, men jeg tror, vi får et topmotiveret OB-hold at se, og så er det spændende at se, jamen, hvad kan de så egentlig, når de sådan virkelig skal til at folde til.
Og det var alt denne gang i Reposten. Tak til James og Simon, fordi de kiggede forbi, og selvfølgelig også til dig, fordi du havde lyst til at lytte med. Husk at abonnere på Reposten i din foretrukne podcast-app, hvis du altså ikke allerede gør det. Og du må også meget gerne lige gå ind og følge os på Twitter og Facebook. Reposten er tilbage igen i starten af næste uge, hvor vi selvfølgelig skal følge op på blandt andet OB's topkamp mod Sønderjyske og se på, hvad der ellers har rørt sig hos de to andre nordjyske første divisionshold. På genhør.
Du har lyttet til en podcast fra Nordjyske.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.